Following is a recording from Melanie Carpenter from iAdvise on Thursday, November 12, 2015 at 8 a.m. Central. Intercorp Financial Services, third quarter, 2015. Good morning and welcome to Intercorp Financial Services third quarter 2015 conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the presentation, we will open the floor for questions. At that time, instructions will be given as to the procedure to follow if you would like to ask a question. Thank you. It is now my pleasure to turn the call over to Rafael Borja of iAdvise Corporate Communications. Sir, please go ahead.
Thank you, Josh, and good morning, everyone. On today's call, Intercorp Financial Services will discuss its third quarter 2015 earnings. We are very pleased to have with us Mr. Luis Felipe Castellanos, Chief Executive Officer of Intercorp Financial Services, Mrs. Miquela Casaza, Chief Financial Officer of Intercorp Financial Services, Mr. Gonzalo Basadre, Chief Executive Officer of Interseguro, and Mr. Bruno Ferreccio, Chief Financial Officer of Inteligo. They will be discussing the results that were distributed yesterday. There is also a presentation to accompany these results. If you didn't receive a copy of the presentation or the earnings, it is now available on the company's website, ifs.com.pe, to download a copy. Otherwise, for any reason, if you need any assistance today, please call iAdvise in New York at 212-406-3693. I would like to remind you that today's call is for investors and analysts only. Therefore, questions from the media will not be taken. It is now my pleasure to turn the call over to Mrs. Casaza, Intercorp's Chief Financial Officer, for her presentation. Mrs. Casaza, please go ahead.
Good morning and welcome to Intercorp Financial Services third quarter earnings presentation. We will start the presentation on page 2 with a summary of the results. At Intercorp Financial Services, the third quarter net profit was $408.6 million, a 48.6% increase year-on-year and 18% quarter-on-quarter. Both yearly and quarterly increases were driven by strong operating performances at Interbank and Interseguro. At Interseguro, there was a strong positive impact year-on-year and quarter-on-quarter attributable to higher releases of technical reserves due to a higher discount rate. The third quarter annualized ROE was 39.2%. At Interbank, the third quarter net profit was $242.4 million, a 29.4% growth year-on-year and 20.6% quarter-on-quarter. The yearly performance was attributed to increases of 17.9% in net interest and similar income, 67% in other income, and 21.8% in fee income, factors which were partially offset by a 44% growth in provisions. The quarterly increase was attributed to higher fees and other income and lower provision expenses, partly offset by an increase in other expenses. Performing loans and deposits grew 12.9% and 15.9% year-on-year respectively, while retail deposits increased 18.4% year-on-year. NIM improved 30 basis points year-on-year to 6.7% in the third quarter, while the efficiency ratio improved 610 basis points year-on-year to 40.5%. The third quarter annualized ROE for the bank was 28.2%. At Interseguro, the third quarter net profit was $156 million, 125% increase year-on-year and 33% quarter-on-quarter. The bottom line result was supported by strong growth in premiums and a positive discount rate impact on technical reserve. Net premiums increased 27.3% year-on-year and 19% quarter-on-quarter due to a market recovery in annuities, where Interseguro remained as market leader with a 24% market share. The third quarter analyzed ROE was higher than 100%. At Inteligo, the third quarter net profit was $16.7 million, down 40% year-on-year and 66% quarter-on-quarter due to lower results on the investment portfolio. Core business continued to perform strongly as net interest and similar income grew 69% year-on-year and fee income increased 50% year-on-year. Asset under management plus deposits increased 14% year-on-year and 3.1% on a quarterly basis. The third quarter annualized ROE for Intelio was 12.6%. On page 3, you can see a summary of the key quarterly indicators for IFS. Net interest and similar income grew strongly at 4.1% on a quarterly basis and 21% year-on-year driven by strong results at the three operating companies. Fee income from financial services has a strong performance, growing 10.8% on a quarterly basis and 27% on a yearly basis. NIM improved 40 basis points year-on-year to 6.4% and remains stable quarter-on-quarter, with NIM at Interbank slightly decreasing 10 basis points to 6.7%, but NIM on loans increasing 10 basis points on the same period. Asset quality remains strong, with a slight improvement in TDS on a quarterly basis of 10 basis points, down to 2.2%. Cost of risk improved 60 basis points on a quarterly basis, down to 2.2%, mainly due to a different mix in the growth of loans at Interbank, with a lower increase in credit cards when compared to the previous quarter, from 8.5% growth in the second quarter to 1.2% in the third quarter, and a higher increase in mortgages from 2.9% to 3.7% in this quarter, and commercial banking from 3.1% in the second quarter to 4% in the third quarter, resulting in lower provision requirements. Insurance metrics remain very strong, with net premiums growing 19.1% on a quarterly basis. Efficiency ratio shows a very strong improvement on a quarterly basis of 200 basis points and on a yearly basis of 770 basis points, down to 33.3%. Capitalization ratio for Interbank remains strong at 15.6%. On page 4, you can see the breakdown of IFS quarterly profits by segment. The third quarter net profit was 409 million, an 18% increase quarter on quarter and 49% year on year. As you can see in the different graphs, there is a very strong core performance of the three operating companies, both at the yearly basis and on a quarterly basis, with some impairments done at Inteligo due to market conditions. The annualized ROE for IFS was 39% and 28% for Interbank. Please turn to the following page for a brief overview of the quarterly net earnings of IFS 3 segments. On page 6, we start with Interbank. Interbank's profits reached 242.4 million in the third quarter, a 41 million increase quarter-on-quarter and 55 million growth year-on-year. The quarterly increase was explained by a reduction of 32 million in provisions, as well as growth of 29 million in other income, 16 million in fee income from financial services, and 8 million in net interest and similar income. These factors were partially offset by a 20 million increase in other expenses. The annual growth in net profit was due to increases of 82 million in net interest and similar income, 57 million in other income, and 34 million in fee income from financial services, which were partially offset by growth of 46 million in other expenses and 43 million in provisions. The bank's ROE was 28.2% in the third quarter, higher than the 24.6% registered in the previous quarter and the 25.2% reported in the same quarter of the previous year. NIM decreased 10 basis points in this quarter to 6.7%, mainly due to higher deposits with the central bank given in exchange for solid funding, as they have very low returns. On the contrary, NIM on loans continue to improve from 8.8% in the third quarter of the previous year to 9.1% in the second quarter of this year to 9.2% in this quarter. NIM net of cost of risk improved 50 basis points on a quarterly basis, from 4.6% in the second quarter to 5.1% in this quarter. On page 7, performing loans grew 3.6% quarter on quarter as a result of 4% increase in commercial loans and 3.3% growth in retail loans. Commercial loans grew in volume, mainly driven by increases in short and medium-term loans and trade finance loans, partially offset by a reduction in leasing facilities. Retail loans increased due to growth of 4.9% in other consumer loans, 3.7% in mortgages, and 1.2% in credit cards. On a yearly basis, performing loans grew 12.9% due to increases of 17% in retail loans and 8.9% in commercial loans. Retail loans grew driven by growth of 21% in credit cards on a yearly basis, 19.4% in other consumer loans, and 11.9% in mortgages. Commercial loans grew mainly due to increases in short and medium-term loans within the corporate and middle market businesses. Our market share in total loans remains stable quarter on quarter, with an increase of 20 basis points in retail and a decrease of 10 basis points in commercial banking. On page 8, Interbank funding base grew 11% quarter on quarter, and this was mainly due to increases of 11.7% in deposits, 16% in due to banks, and 2% in bonds. The increase in due to banks and Interbank funds was driven by higher funding provided by the central bank, while it was a very strong quarter for core deposits, which increased 18.5% in commercial deposits and 3.6% in retail deposits. The bank's total funding base increased 25.8% year on year. The increase was due to growth of more than 100% in due to banks and Interbank funds, starting from a very low base, 15.9% in deposits and 9% in bonds. The yearly growth in due to banks was mainly due to an increase in the funding provided by the central bank, while the increase in bonds was mainly explained by the depreciation of the exchange rate. The strong year-on-year growth in deposits was attributed to increases of 14% in commercial deposits and 18% in retail deposits. As a result, the proportion of retail deposits to total deposits increased from 41.5% in the third quarter of the previous year to 42.4% in this quarter. Retail and commercial deposits together represent 68% of total funding, with central bank funds stable at 9%. On page 9, when looking at FDS comparable figures to the system, Interbank's past due loan ratio was 2.3 in the third quarter, 10 basis points below the 2.4 reported in the previous quarter and 30 basis points above the 2% registered in the third quarter of the previous year. The coverage ratio remains strong at 186%. The same trends are valid for the IFRS PDL figures. When looking at the PDL breakdown, we can see within retail that overall consumer credit PDL has improved 10 basis points to 3.1% and remains below the system average of 3.3%. Credit card PDL have improved 10 basis points to 3.8% and again below the industry average of 3.9%. Mortgages for the first quarter started to improve its PDL ratio 10 basis points down to 2.6%, while the industry average deteriorated 10 additional basis points up to 1.7%. Within the commercial portfolio, PDLs remain relatively stable on a quarterly basis. The annualized ratio of provision expense to average loans was 2.8% in the third quarter, in line with the 2.8% registered in the second quarter of 2015 and above the 1.7% reported in the third quarter of the previous year. This ratio is 60 basis points above the system average of 2.2%, mainly due to three reasons. First, our product mix, as we continue to grow stronger in retail. Second, our smaller growth in corporate loans when compared to competitors, which have a lower cost of risk. And third, a conservative approach we are pursuing as we continue to constitute procyclical provisions this year, despite the fact that those provisions have been deactivated. When looking at the IFRS cost of risk figure, the quarterly improvement in cost of risk of 70 basis points is mainly due to a different mix in the growth of loans, with a lower increase in credit cards when compared to the previous quarter and a higher increase in mortgages and commercial banking, resulting in lower provision requirements. On page 10, we are including the trend of the de-dollarization of our portfolio over the last 12 months. When compared to the industry, our portfolio is more de-dollarized, with 71.3% of our portfolio in soles versus 65.8% of the industry as of the third quarter. This is mainly due to two factors. We have a higher share of retail loans, which are more soles-based than commercial loans, and we have a higher soles-based component in our mortgage portfolio within retail loans. Moreover, we have been able to de-dollarize 9 additional percentage points over the last 12 months. On the other side, on the deposit side, we have seen a dollarization of the deposit base of 8 percentage points over the last 12 months. On page 11, Fee income from financial services increased 9.4% on a quarterly basis and 21.8% year-on-year. The quarterly performance was mainly explained by an increase of $6.5 million in fees from maintenance and mailing of accounts, interchange fees, transfer and credit and debit and services, in addition to an increase of $5.8 million in commissions from banking services. Such increases were partially offset by higher expenses due to higher insurance premiums. So, the yearly increase in fee income from financial services was mainly attributable to increases of $25 million in fees from maintenance and mailing of accounts, interchange fees, transfer, credit and debit card services, and $7.3 million in commission from banking services. The higher fees was due to higher balances of credit cards, while the increase in commissions was a result of higher insurance premiums sold, which in turn was partially offset by $5 million increase in insurance-related expenses. Other expenses increased 5.7% on a quarterly basis and 13.9% on a yearly basis. The quarterly growth was mainly due to increases of 6% in administrative expenses and 1.5% in salaries, partially offset by a reduction of 1.5% in depreciation and amortization expenses. The annual growth in other expenses was a result of increases of 10% in administrative expenses and 9% in salaries, partially offset by 4.6% reduction in depreciation and amortization. The efficiency ratio was 40.5% in the third quarter, below the 41.7% reported in the previous quarter and the 46.6% registered in the third quarter of the previous year. On page 12, to summarize, Interbank registered a strong quarter with net profit growing 29% on a yearly basis with a solid annualized ROE of 28.2%. On page 13, the ratio of regulatory capital to risk-weighted assets was 15.6% in the third quarter. The quarterly decrease in the capital ratio was due to a 5.8% increase in risk-weighted assets. This increase in risk-weighted assets was explained by growth of 30% in investments and 3.7% in loans. As of the third quarter, Interbank's capital ratio of 15.6% was 380 basis points above its risk-adjusted minimum capital ratio requirement established at 11.8%. The minimum regulatory capital ratio requirement was 10%, while the additional capital requirement for Interbank was 1.8%. Please turn to the following page to discuss Interseguro's results. On page 15, Interseguro's net profit attributable to shareholders in the third quarter was $156.2 million, an increase of $38.7 million quarter-on-quarter and $86 million year-on-year. The quarterly growth in profits was mainly due to a $35.6 million increase in total premiums earned less claims and benefits, a $24.3 million increase in net gain on sale of securities. These factors were partially offset by a $19 million growth in impairment loss on available-for-sale investments, accounted as other expenses. The yearly increase was mainly due to $51.4 million increase in total premium earned less claims and benefits, a $40.8 million growth in net gain on sale of security, and a $17.4 million increase in net interest and similar income, driven by growth of Interseguro's investment portfolio. These effects were partially offset by a $29.3 million increase in impairment loss on available-for-sale investments. The annualized ROE for the third quarter was higher than 100%, above the 48.7% reported in the third quarter of the previous year and the 95.4% registered in the second quarter of 2015. On page 16, you can see a comparison of Interseguro's results with local GAAP results. Interseguro's net profit attributable to shareholders under IFRS was $156.2 million, and it was $62.8 million under local accounting GAAP. The main differences between IFRS and local GAAP profits are as follows. First, a lower adjustment on technical reserves than the IFRS as a result of the use of a higher weighted average discount rate to calculate technical reserves for annuities. Second, a higher net gain on valuation of real estate investments as under IFRS, they are considered fair value. Third, a higher impairment loss on available for sale investments due to a more rigorous impairment policy under IFRS. default, a lower net gain on sale of securities, as under local GAAP, securities cost of sale is determined by first in, first out, whereas under IFRS, it is defined by averages. And fifth, a higher profit in foreign exchange as a result of different dollar stocks of assets and liabilities in IFRS compared to local GAAP. On page 17, net premiums in the third quarter were $214 million, a 19% increase on a quarterly basis and 27% on a yearly basis. The quarterly increase was related to a market recovery after a temporary contraction due to the new retirement bond modes introduced in the second quarter. The yearly growth was mainly attributable to strong business growth. Annuities market share in the third quarter was 24%, which positioned Interseguro as the market leader. Adjustment of technical reserves in the third quarter was $46.7 million, a 17% decrease quarter-on-quarter and 37% decrease year-on-year. The quarterly decrease was explained by the use of a higher weighted average discount rate to calculate technical reserves, the same as in the yearly performance. Net claims and benefits incurred during the third quarter were $68.8 million, a 14% increase on a quarterly basis and 47% increase on a yearly basis. The yearly growth was mainly explained by higher annuity pensions. Considering the factors previously mentioned, total premiums earned, less claims and benefits, resulted in $98.5 million in the third quarter, an increase of $35.6 million on a quarterly basis and of $51.4 million on a yearly basis. On page 18, in the third quarter, Interseguro's investment portfolio reached $4,659 million, a 1.8% decrease on a quarterly basis, but an increase of 9.6% on a yearly basis. Results from investments in the third quarter were $94.1 million, which represented an 8% return on Interseguro's investment portfolio, the same as the 8% reported in the second quarter, but above the 6.5% reported in the third quarter of the previous year. The quarterly growth was largely explained by an increase of 24.3% in net gain on sale of securities. This effect was offset by an increase of $19 million in impairment loss on available for sale investments and a decrease of $5 million in valuation gains on investment properties. The growth in net gain on sale of security was mainly due to higher gains in equity. The decrease in valuation gain from investment property was due to real estate appreciation of certain properties recognized in the second quarter. The yearly growth was largely explained by an increase of $41 million in net gain on sale of securities and an increase of $17.4 million in net interest and similar income, partially offset by a rise of $39.3 million in impairment loss on available for sale investments and a decrease of $3.9 million in net trading income. The increase in net gain on sale of securities was due to higher gains in equity. Likewise, the increase in net interest was mainly explained by a higher inflation rate. The inflation rate increased from 2.53% in the second quarter to 3.38% in the third quarter, leading to an increase in income from our inflation index bonds, which represent approximately a fifth of our fixed income portfolio. On page 20, we will start the discussion on Inteligo's group results. Inteligo's net interest and similar income in the third quarter was $22.8 million, a 1.2% decrease quarter-on-quarter, but a 69% increase year-on-year. The quarterly result was attributable to lower income on investments available for sale, partially offset by an increase in interest on loans. The yearly result was explained by higher income on investments available for sale and a higher interest on loans. Client-related interest income grew as a result of a 2.4% quarter-on-quarter and 25% year-on-year growth in the size of our loan portfolio. Fee income for financial services increased 23.6% on a quarterly basis and almost 50% year-on-year. The results were attributable to a higher activity in the rebalancing of client portfolio. Other income in the third quarter reverted negatively from 18.8% in the second quarter and $5 million in the third quarter of the previous year to minus $13.8 million in this quarter. This result was attributable to a lower net gain on sale of securities on the investment portfolio, together with a higher mark-to-market loss on valuation of securities held for trading in the third quarter of this year. Other expenses increased 24% quarter on quarter due to a 6.1 million impairment loss on available for sale investment, while the year-on-year expenses increased 74.7% mainly due to the previously mentioned impairment loss and to higher salaries and employee benefits as well as administrative expenses. As a result, Inteligo's net profit in the third quarter was 16.7 million, a 33 million decrease quarter on quarter and 11.4 million decrease year on year. On page 21, asset under management plus deposits reached 12,355 million in the third quarter, showing a 375 million or 3.1% increase quarter on quarter and also a 1,525 million or 14.1% increase year on year. Inteligo's loan portfolio stood at 1,639 million in the third quarter, a 38.5 million or 2.4% increase on a quarterly basis and 25% increase year on year. Revenues generated by Inteligo reached 44 million, a 38% decrease quarter on quarter, but a 2.3% increase year on year. The quarterly result was attributable to a decline in other income, as previously mentioned. Inteligo Bank's fee income, divided by assets under management, stood at 1.5% in the third quarter, showing a strong improvement quarter on quarter as well as year on year, from 1.1% in the third quarter of 2014 and 1.3% in the previous quarter. Net profit in the third quarter was 16.7 million, while ROE stood at 12.6%, below the 38% reported in the previous quarter and the 23% registered in the third quarter of the previous year. To finalize the presentation on page 23, we conclude that IFS registered solid third quarter results with strong operating performance in all three segments, with sound asset quality and high profitability levels. At Interbank, a 20.1% year-on-year growth in consumer loans and 18.4% year-on-year growth in retail deposits, 2.3% PDL ratio below the system's 2.6%, a strong improvement in the efficiency ratio year-on-year down to 40.5%. At Interseguro, premiums grew 19% on a quarterly basis and 27% year-on-year, with a 9.6% yearly growth on the investment portfolio. At Inteligo, asset under management plus deposits increased 3% on a quarterly basis and 14.1% on a yearly basis. Loans grew 2.4% quarterly and 25% year on year. High profitability at IFS with 48% year on year growth in net profits and 18% quarter on quarter, and with a third quarter annualized ROE of 39.2%. Now we welcome any questions you may have.
Thank you. At this time, we will open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key on your touchtone phones now. Questions will be taken in the order in which they are received. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, just press star two. Again, to ask a question, please press star one now. We now have our first question coming from Juan Dominguez from Credicorp Capital.
Good morning, and thank you for hosting this call. I have some questions regarding the loan book. First, I wonder if you can provide us some color on what are you expecting in terms of NPL formation and cost of credit in the coming quarters. Second, you could provide us some guidance on what are the drivers behind the uptick in commercial lending, which increased 4% quarter over quarter. And finally, what are your estimations of the dollarization of the loan book that you believe will be sustainable in the long term for Interbank? Thank you.
Good morning, and thank you for your question. Related to the loan book going forward, What we are seeing is a slight slowdown of the growth of credit cards. This is what we have seen this quarter, and a pickup of mortgages and commercial loans. Why is that? First of all, in mortgages, we saw a deceleration of our growth, mainly due to the fact that we also saw an increase in the PDLs within a specific segment of mortgages, which was related to the independent sub-segment of clients. Okay, now that we have sorted out a better way to start lending to these clients, we have started to grow again in line and a little bit faster than the market in this last month. So we expect mortgages to continue to grow stronger than what we have seen in the past. A second change in the growth of the loan book is related to commercial lending, and this is also related to your third point. During this year, we have been participating less actively in the large corporate market due to the fact that there has been a strong de-dollarization of those loans with big ticket transactions where we, let's say, normally are not very active. So basically, we lost some market share in this segment. In this third quarter, we have participated in certain transactions, okay, but still, as you have seen from the figures, we have lost 10 basis point market share there. But what we do expect for the future in that particular segment is also to be a little bit more active in order not to lose any additional market share. As to your second point, NPL and cost of risk, what we are seeing in the local GAAP figures is that we are still below the system's average in terms of numbers, but we have seen a slight deterioration if you see the trend over the past quarter. This is mainly due to our product mix. Basically, as we have been growing more in retail lending and very strongly in credit cards and consumer loans, okay, this has impacted the total NPL ratio due to the weight of the different segments. And again, as we have been growing less in commercial loans, and specifically on the large corporate segment, which requires less provisions, when you calculate the aggregate ratio, this ratio shows worse than the system. Going forward, as we continue to grow a little bit more in mortgages and in large corporate compared to the past, this product mix effect should stabilize. And looking at your last point in terms of de-dollarization, as I commented during the call, we are now at 71.3% of our loan book already in soles, okay? And within our retail portfolio, actually, we only have a small portion of the old mortgages. It's like 23% of the mortgage book, which is still in dollars. We expect that within the retail portfolio, de-dollarization will continue as new mortgages are more than 95% disbursed in soles. So as we continue to move forward, the portion of dollars will continue to decrease within retail. And within the commercial portfolio, we expect some additional de-dollarization to take place, okay, but in any case, we still expect to have an important portion of the loan book in dollars, which will be related strictly to exporters and to companies that have cash flow generated in dollars. I'm not sure whether I answered all your points.
Oh, yes, thank you. That was very useful.
Okay.
Thank you. Again, if anyone would like to ask a question, please press star 1 now. Our next question comes from Niles Danielson from Profuturo.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the call. So my question is regarding Interseguro. There is on Interseguro's standalone financial statements, there's a negative 105 million soles negative equity charge that says it's due adjustments for equity. Could you elaborate on what that is?
Sure. That's unrealized gains that it's booked directly to equity. That relates to a realized gain we did during the quarter. So that result went from unrealized losses to results for the period. So it's just a movement of the realized gains we did in the sale of those securities. I don't know if this answers your question. And in part, it's also a reduction in the value of some of our available for sale portfolio. But most of it is related to the sale and realization of gains from a particular security. May I explain myself?
You mean of a single... could you be a little bit more specific? Do you mean it's a loss made, the realization of a loss made on the sale of a particular security, one specific security?
The account of unrealized gains or losses in equity is the sum of all our portfolio, of all our available for sale portfolios. Some of our positions are positive, some of our positions are negative. Okay, when we have realized the gain during the quarter by the sale of some security, that gain shows up in the results for the period, but it's subtracted from the unrealized gains account. Is it more clear now?
Yes. Okay. And these are just available for sale security, so it's mostly due to the market downturn in August, possibly?
Yeah. It's the market deterioration during the month.
Okay. That answers my question. Thanks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Boris Molina from Santander.
Yes. could you give us some color of what is your exposure to, agricultural sectors or sectors that might be affected by El Niño? What is the regulatory impact of how you treat these borrowers? We understand that there are some circumstances where they might suspend interest payments, etc., over some period of time. So I would like to see if you could give us a little bit of your color of this exposure. And secondly, we are seeing how your asset quality trends in both SMEs and credit cards are still a little bit weaker than the system, no? So how much of this do you believe is related to individuals that own small businesses and then they use their credit cards to keep their businesses afloat, and could there be some contagion between these two business areas? Because we've seen that this has been a problem in other institutions that lend to small companies. So is there any checks that you perform in order to validate that a business owner credit risk is the same credit risk as the business itself? Because the small business size owner is basically one credit entity. No? So is this a trend? Is this something that you're seeing going on? And could we expect this to continue to be a problem in the future?
Okay, hi, it's Felipe Castellanos here. I'm going to go for part of the answer, and then Michaela will help me complementing the other part. In terms of our loan book, of our commercial loan book, around 11.5% is exposed to the agricultural business and 5% in fishing. And that's kind of the commercial book is 50% of our whole portfolio, so of the total loan book, you will have to divide these numbers by two. Some of these are located in the north, which under a Niño event would be mostly affected. It is a standard in the industry, most of our medium-term loans have clauses related to a potential phenomenon El Niño, where the customer, if the client sees that their cash flow is being affected, they could delay one of the payments until the situation stabilizes. So far, we have not received any of those this year. In the past, we did when we had that 97, 98 phenomenon. So we've been through this process, and we understand how.
Are you required to make additional provisions when a Niño effect event is decreed, or do you make provisions for this type of circumstances ahead of potential problems?
I guess those are covered with the pro-cyclical provisions that, as Michaela mentioned, despite they have been deactivated, we continue doing that in our local book. IFRS is a little bit different. It's based on in potential losses. They kind of match our provisions in local in local GAAP if we continue doing the procyclical. Obviously, for our forecast of next year in the budget, we are including some potential additional provisions for certain customers that are kind of exposed. We've been working actively with our customers, visiting them, looking at their contingent plans and all that. We feel very comfortable that the customers we work with have both experience in facing this type of situation, and they have the means to face an effect. But obviously, we're being conservative because we don't know what the magnitude of it can be and the impact in the whole economy. You know?
Okay, wonderful.
Okay, then I guess the other part of the question was related to the SMEs and consumer loans. First, just complementing a question before, no, we do foresee that the economic slowdown will have a backdrop in our portfolio, so we are managing appropriately. Part of the deceleration in our growth of credit cards during last quarter is a result of certain measures that we have taken to tighten our underwriting standards. But we do foresee that our provisioning levels would be at around these levels or even a little bit higher depending on how the economy evolves next year. No? Now, let me pass it on to Michaela so she can complement on the SME independence question.
A couple of points. When we show, for example, in our slide number 9, the breakdown on PDL, no, we talk within the commercial banking on small and micro companies, which is the definition of the SDS. But actually, the portfolio of Interbank is completely focused on small businesses. We are not active into the micro business, okay, which is the segment who was mostly affected over the past 2 years. Okay, we have no business with micro business. We tried to do a pilot 2-3 years ago. It didn't result as we expected, so we decided not to pursue that strategy. So basically, when you see the increase in the PDLs that went from 4.4% to 6.6% in the small and micro segment, this is mostly related to small businesses. So basically, in that small business, there is little bit of, if you want, the duplication with the clients that then we do have on the individual or retail segment of the bank. Basically, yes, we target the self-employed segment with credit cards, okay, but within the self-employed segment, we also target a specific subsegment of clients, which are the professionals and the individuals with formalized own businesses, but we're talking about businesses which are, much, let's say, smaller than what we target in commercial banking. And basically, in order to try to put some order and not to give loans to the self-employed that then will be used in order to finance their business, we have some limits as to how much we are willing to give lines to this segment. So basically, what I explained within the mortgage segment, which actually impacted the PDL ratio in the past quarter, now that this quarter has actually reverted and started to improve, yes, it was an effect of those self-employed guys that were mixing a little bit of the business with their own needs, no, and having some trouble in paying off their mortgage. So basically, what we have been doing during this year, we stopped growth at that specific segment, but that impacted the growth of mortgages because that was one of the fastest growing segments. And we have reviewed our underwriting processes, and we have actually strengthened those processes with some, let's say, physical checks that we were not doing before. Now, I think that was what you were mentioning in your question. So basically, today we have some tightened standards as to how we are giving mortgages to this subsegment of the retail population. I'm not sure whether this covers what you were asking.
Yes, thank you very much, Felipe and Nicola. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, if anyone would like to ask a question, please press star 1 now. Our next question comes from Carlos Rojas from Andino.
Hi, thank you for the call and good numbers. I have one question for the bank and one for the insurance. For the bank, it's, as we know, the growth has been very weak in general in the country. I don't know if you can give us a little bit of light of what are you expecting as Interbank for the next like 6 to 12 months. You're going to increase your loans in corporate or in retail. Do you have the financing strategy regarding that? That's for the bank. Then in insurance, we have hearing a lot of noise lately in the last 2 weeks about the mortality tables, which could affect the net worth of the company. I know you have any idea of how it would be affect or what happened yesterday about eliminating the obligation to almost use an annuity for the after you have the money in the pension fund. Do you have any idea how much this affects Interseguros as a whole, or you are just addressing that? Thank you very much.
Okay, hi, this is Felipe. I'm going to the first part of the question, and then the second will be Gonzalo Vasari. On the first, on outlook for growth, it's probably going to be something similar to this year in terms of growth, something between 10 and 15% growth of the loan book. We like, as you all know, our balanced strategy of 50% retail, 50% commercial, so we're going to target for that. Obviously, some deviations to that will depend specifically on the dynamics of how it evolves. This year, for instance, we grew faster our retail book, and then we catch up in the third quarter in the commercial part of it. So we'll try to work on that balance, which is a kind of a long-term strategy we've been pursuing during the last year. No? So a mix between retail and consumer, probably growing a little bit slower than this year. As Michaela mentioned, mortgages a little bit faster. And then commercial, we're very focused on medium-sized enterprises. And in terms of corporate, well, it has to come with a significant, with a specific opportunities, like the ones we have witnessed in the third quarter of this year. And then for the other part, let me pass it on to Gonzalo.
Sure. Good morning, Carlos. So the industry as a whole has been in the news in the last week. First of all, the mortality details. The superintendency yesterday announced that they are canceling the introduction of the new table, just because of this media storm that has arisen because of it. This would have been the third time that tables are changed, and in each of these changes, longevity is increased a little bit, because people are living a little bit more. This hasn't represented a major problem or any problem at all for the industry, because with the new tables, there's also new regulations or accompanied that make that transition smooth. Regarding the law that was, well, the project that was passed yesterday regarding the that people can take their money when they reach retirement age, well, this very reason, it's too early to tell if the law is finally going to be passed. We consider it to be negative for future retirees, and could represent additional expenses for the government, as some of them would be left with no income. Even Minister Segura has declared that they are concerned about it. We're following very closely, and we'll give any update as soon as we have this thing clears a little bit.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Again, if anyone would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phones now. Again, that is star 1 if you would like to ask a question. And at this time, I'm showing no further questions in the queue. I'd now like to turn the call back over to Mrs. Casazas for closing remarks.
Okay, thank you very much for joining us today. We will see everybody again during the last quarter of this year's conference call results. Thanks.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect.